prohibition on Shabbos for us to do any kind of activity that is not really for the purpose of Shabbos itself. It is only for the purpose of later on during the week or after Shabbos. So let's try to understand what exactly this prohibition is all about, what is included, and what perhaps might not be included in the prohibition. What are we allowed to do, and what are we not? So we begin with the Mishnah, Maseches Shabbos, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, where the Mishnah tells us, number Aleph on the source sheet, Matzien Asamitos Milele Shabbos LeShabbos. One is allowed to use the beds on Friday night, obviously, but then when one wakes up after they sleep on Friday night, and now they plan to use the bed once again on Shabbos afternoon, and it will be more comfortable if you make the beds up, so then you're allowed to do so because making that bed is for the purposes of Shabbos itself. Avalomi Shabbos Lamatzai Shabbos. Let's say one takes a nap on Shabbos afternoon, and now the only reason why you're going to make the bed is that it should be comfortable to use on Matzai Shabbos after Shabbos is over. That, says the Gemara, is not permissible. Now just notice, what malacha is involved in making a bed? Nothing. I'm not really doing any very detailed activity. All I'm doing is spreading the blanket, putting the pillows in the right place, but yet you see that hachana, the prohibition of preparing on Shabbos for the weekday, does not have anything to do with whether or not I'm violating a malacha on Shabbos. The point is, the Ravid writes, when he discusses the violation, the prohibition of hachana, he writes that the violation that we're dealing with here is something that is a tircha shelo letzorech. To do something that is not necessary for Shabbos itself means that I'm extenuating myself, I'm going above and beyond on Shabbos for something that is not enhancing my Shabbos at all. And therefore, we assume that that applies whether you're dealing with malacha or whether you're dealing with something that is just a tircha, just something that is bothersome to do, like making the beds. Says the Gemara in Kuf Yud Ches Amud Aleph in Maseches Shabbos, that the same way we discussed the case of making the beds on Shabbos, and the only time you're allowed to do that is when it's for the purposes of Shabbos itself, but not when it's for the purposes of Matzoi Shabbos. Secondly, says the Gemara, this also applies to the cutlery, to the plates, to the spoons, to the cups, to the knives, and to everything else that I plan to use on Shabbos, as opposed to those that I plan to use after Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Ka'aros, the plates, Sha'acha Bahem Arvis, that I use for my meal on Friday night, Madichan, I'm allowed to rinse them, Le'acha Bahem Shachris, to eat from them and to use them for my meal on Shabbos morning. And similarly, says the Gemara, if I have all the cutlery, if I have all the plates and the cups that I use Shachris in the morning for breakfast, Madichan Le'acha Bahem Etzaraim, you're allowed to wash those off in order for them to be used for the meal on Shabbos afternoon. Batzaharayim, if I use them once again on Shabbos afternoon, I'm allowed to wash those off, Le'acha Bahem Mincha, to use them later in the afternoon for Shalashudas, or the Shabbos party. However, says the Gemara, once you get Mina Mincha Ve'elech, once you get further on in the day, and now there's no reasonable assumption that anyone is going to use these plates any longer on Shabbos, because we've had all of our meals, we've had all the Shabbos, there's no reason why the plates are going to be taken out again, says the Gemara, Shuv, Eino Madichan, one is no longer able to clean those plates anymore, because Rashi says, it's clear, it's apparent, it's obvious that the only reason why I'm cleaning these plates off is in order that they should be ready to be used on Sunday or on Matzai Shabbos, that my job should be easier and I shouldn't have to stay up late cleaning the plates. So that is what the Gemara tells us, both with regard to the beds as well as with regard to the plates. And this is codified lahalacha and Shulchan Aruch in two places in Hilchos Shabbos, both in Siman Shin Beis as well as in Siman Shin Chav Gimel. The Shulchan Aruch writes clearly that we have to make sure that all the activities that we do on Shabbos are only ones that pertain to the enhancement of Shabbos itself, but nothing can be done that's only being done for the purposes of Chol. Now we'll get to the exceptions to the rule in a couple of minutes. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach points out something which is fairly obvious, but I think it's a point worth mentioning. Reb Shlomo Zalman writes that sometimes, let's say you have the short Shabbosos in the winter, so you finish your meal, you have company over, you finish the meal at 2 o'clock or whatever it might be, and then you have an obligation to eat Shalashudas. Now let's just make it clear. Men and women share the obligation to eat Shalashudas on Shabbos. That's an important fact to be aware of. The Shulchan Aruch writes clearly that men and women share the obligation of eating three meals on Shabbos. And that's something that very often people are not careful about. Men and women have an obligation to eat three meals on Shabbos. Men and women also share the obligation to have, by each of those meals, two loaves of bread. Where does that come from? Shouldn't we say that women are generally not obligated to keep anything which is a time-bound mitzvah, anything which is a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, normally women are not obligated to keep. So here, this certainly applies only to Shabbos, that you have to have two rolls by the meal and that you have to eat three meals on Shabbos. That's something that doesn't apply during the week. If someone decided they wanted to fast any other day of the week, they could do so. On Shabbos, we generally assume we have an obligation, so why should women be obligated? That's a discussion between Rabbeinu Tam and the Ran. It's a discussion amongst the Rishonim. One of the Rishonim assumes, again, everyone agrees that women have an obligation. The only question is, why? Some assume that the reason why women are obligated is because the same way women are commanded that they have to keep to all the negative commandments of Shabbos, they're not allowed to violate any malacha on Shabbos, so too, say the Rishonim, they have to keep all of the positive commandments of Shabbos. So they have to make sure to make Kiddush on Shabbos, and that they're not allowed to eat before making Kiddush on Shabbos. And they have to make sure also, as a byproduct of that they eat the rolls on Shabbos that they're supposed to eat, and that they make sure to have three meals on Shabbos as well. That is one opinion in the Rishonim as to the source why women are obligated to eat three meals on Shabbos and to have two loaves of bread by each of those meals. The other Rishonim disagree, and they say no. The reason why women are obligated to do so is because we know that the reason we have loaves of bread on Shabbos and the reason why we have three meals on Shabbos is because that's in commemoration of the incredible miracle of the man, that the Jewish people received lechem min hashamayim. They had this miraculous bread that was provided for them in the years in the desert. And because women were just as involved in that miracle as the men were, therefore we say this is an exception to the rule. And although it's something that is time-bound and only applies on Shabbos itself, since women were equally benefiting from that miracle in the times of the desert, in the times of the Jewish people traveling in the Midbar, therefore we assume that women have the equal obligation to keep to this law of Shabbos just like the men do. So this is a very important halacha to be aware of. So let's say you have the short Shabbosos, and Shabbos is going to be over at 4:30 or 5 o'clock, and you only finished your meal Shabbos morning at 2:30 or 3 o'clock. So you have to be careful, like the Shulchan Aruch writes, Chacham Eina Berosho. The Shulchan Aruch says you should plan in advance how you're going to eat the three meals. Don't bench at 3 o'clock in the afternoon if that's going to prevent you from eating a meal at 3:30 in the afternoon. Maybe cut the meal short at 1:30, bench, sit around and talk to each other and have a nice time, and then wash again later on. It's something that the Shulchan Aruch already warns us of because it's something that people are not careful about. So says the Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, back to our point, he writes that sometimes when you have the short Shabbosos and you're not able to always eat Shalosh Shudos that early in the afternoon because your meal extended much further than you expected it to, so now you're going to wash for Shalosh Shudos maybe a minute before the Shkia, a minute before it gets dark outside. But your Shalosh Shudos is really going to be eaten, almost all of it, after Shkia, which means it's technically after Shabbos is over, after sundown. So therefore, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, should we assume that there's a prohibition of Hachana when it comes to preparing all the food on Shabbos afternoon for the Shalosh Shudos, when in fact the Shalosh Shudos that I'm going to eat is going to be after Shabbos is technically over? Should there be a violation of preparing for that? So he writes, no. Why not? Because he says, in the end of the day, the reason why I'm doing this is really to enhance the experience of Shabbos itself. The reason why I'm preparing everything I'm doing is, even though I'm going to eat technically much of it after Shabbos, but still, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, I'm doing it for the purposes of Shabbos alone. And therefore we assume that would not be a violation of Hachana, that is not considered to be a Tircha Shalo Litzarech, because that is Litzarech. I'm doing it for the purposes of Shabbos itself, even though much of what I'm going to do is going to be enjoyed and eaten after Shabbos might be technically over. Now, the Mishnah Berurah points out that although we say here that you're allowed to wash the cups if you feel that you're going to use them again on Shabbos, or you're allowed to wash the plates if you feel you need them again for Shabbos morning, says the Mishnah Berurah, does it mean if I have 10 guests over on Friday night and Shabbos morning it's only going to be myself and a few family members, do I have to sit and count how many plates I need and make a calculation of how many I'm allowed to do? Says the Mishnah Berurah, no. Once we allow you to wash the plates, you're allowed to wash all of the plates, even though you're not expecting so much company. But still, we assume once we allow you to wash them, you're allowed to wash them all, because you never know which ones you're going to use, which ones you're not going to use. Maybe you prefer this plate over that plate, this cup over that cup. Therefore, he writes, once you're allowed to wash them, you're allowed to wash them all. And there's no reason to start calculating which ones might be necessary for the morning meal and which ones might not. Any questions so far? No questions about the exceptions to the rule. We'll get to that. Any questions so far? Yes.
In reference to something like making beds,
Yeah. If it affects your Onei Shabbos. So that's what we're going to get to. The exceptions to the rule we're going to get to. No, it's an important question, but just hold on to the question for a few minutes. So not only do we assume that there's a prohibition to do hachana, to prepare from Shabbos to weekday, but we assume this applies from any Kedusha Chamura to a Kedusha Kala. From anything that's on a higher level, you're not allowed to prepare for something that is on a lower level. So take, for example, Shabbos to Yom Tov is an obvious example. However, we assume that that applies as well from Yom Tov to Chol, because Yom Tov is on a higher level than a regular day of the week. So you're not allowed to prepare on Yom Tov for the purposes of after Yom Tov. You're not allowed to prepare on Yom Tov for the purposes of Chol HaMoed. Now, how do we know what the hierarchy is? How do we know what's considered higher or lower? Let's say you have Shabbos and Yom Tov. How do you know what's higher, what's lower? Shabbos. How do you know? You don't cook on Shabbos. That's not really the correct answer. Cooking on Shabbos might be a different reason why you can't cook on Shabbos than on Yom Tov. But how do you know which one is more elevated and which one is more sanctified? So the Gemara discusses the case. Let's say we say Yom Kippur. How do you know which one is greater? So the Gemara discusses the case. Says the Gemara as follows. We can learn this from the way we lain in Kriyas HaTorah on all of those given days. So on a regular Monday and Thursday throughout the year, no Yom Tov, no Shabbos, no Chol HaMoed. On a regular Monday and Thursday in Shul, we lain from the Sefer Torah. How many Aliyos do we have on a regular Monday and Thursday? Says the Gemara, three. People have to go to work, people are busy, people are running out, but we need to have Kriyas HaTorah, so we have three Aliyos. And because it's the lowest level of Kedusha, therefore we only have three Aliyos. What's the next level up? Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, we assume, is the next level up from a regular day of the week. And therefore, on Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, we lain four Aliyos from the Sefer Torah. Next level up from Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed is Yom Tov. And that's why on Yom Tov we have five Aliyos. Now, what's the next level up? Here's the trick question. So, the answer is you're both right. The Gemara has a disagreement. The Gemara is not sure. Is Shabbos the next level up? Or is Shabbos two levels up? Maybe between Yom Kippur and Shabbos, we're not sure which one is greater. How can you say anything's greater than Shabbos? Shabbos is Shabbos and Yom Kippur is just Yom Tov. The answer is the Pasuk says Yom Kippur is Shabbos Shabbason. So maybe Yom Kippur outdoes Shabbos. So maybe we should assume Yom Kippur has seven Aliyos and Shabbos only has six. And that's a discussion in the Gemara, but the bottom line is that Shabbos is greater than Yom Kippur. And even though Yom Kippur has this double terminology of Shabbos Shabbason, still we assume that Shabbos is considered more holy than Yom Kippur, and that's why Shabbos is on top. So that's how you figure out which one is considered to be holier than the next, and which one you're allowed to do hachana from one to the next. Yes? Breakfast on Shabbos? Yeah. You eat three meals on Shabbos. Well, breakfast in general is a problem for two reasons. Number one, because you haven't really eaten Kiddush, you haven't really recited Kiddush, and that's why Kiddush clubs sometimes pose major issues, aside from the fact that it pulls people out of shul and it gets them intoxicated and they act in ways that they shouldn't. Aside from all of those issues, there's an issue about the fact that many people don't really listen to Kiddush. They just run out, have something to eat, and come back. That's a very serious prohibition. You're not allowed to eat without reciting Kiddush on Shabbos, aside from the fact that you're not allowed to eat in the middle of davening, and that you're not allowed to leave in the middle of davening. The Gemara says, Ozve Hashem Yichalu, somebody who walks out in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah is very seriously punished for that. The Gemara tells us that. Nothing to do with the Kiddush club, just in general. But breakfast on Shabbos is a problem, unless the person is eating breakfast for the purposes of their health. If they're eating breakfast for the purposes of their health, then they should do that regardless of whether or not it's a mitzvah. So generally on Shabbos we have three meals, and the way the Rambam writes about the three meals on Shabbos, he suggests that the first meal has to be eaten after you daven on Friday night, second meal has to be eaten after you daven on Shabbos morning, and the third meal has to be eaten after you daven mincha on Shabbos afternoon, which again, most of us are not so careful about either. We generally tend to eat shalosh shudas whenever is most convenient for us, but the Rambam says the real way to do it is that you should bookend the meals with the tefillah, that you should show that the reason why I'm eating this meal is because I daven mincha, I sanctify the day, and now I go ahead and I eat my meal. So that's the Rambam's opinion, that's what you should try to do if possible. Very often it's not so possible. Let's say here in the shul, we daven mincha right before the shkia, and then we have a shir that doesn't allow people to eat shalosh shudas after mincha. They don't go home after mincha. So that's an interesting question. And again, that obviously violates the position of the Rambam, and I think the reason why we do it here is because you have a captive audience. If you don't do that, there are people who perhaps will go through a whole Shabbos without learning Torah. And it's very important that on Shabbos we learn Torah. As the Medrash says in Parshas Vayakel, Vayakel Moshe es kol hadas b'nei Yisrael vayomer aleihem. Moshe Rabbeinu, every Shabbos, what he did on Shabbos was he gathered everyone in, he taught them the Hilchos Shabbos, he taught them Torah, and that's a very central focus of what Shabbos is supposed to be used for. It's not supposed to be used for everything else. Shabbos is really supposed to have a designated time when we learn either Hilchos Shabbos or Torah in general. That goes for men and for women. In fact, the Baal HaTanya writes that in his community he made sure to have shiurim for women on Shabbos as well, because it was important that men and women alike share this experience and opportunity on Shabbos when their minds are not caught up with everything else, to learn Torah with a clear head and to understand the Hilchos Shabbos that we all should be studying on Shabbos proper. So again, back to where we started. We have various levels of Kedusha from Shabbos, Yom Tov, Chol HaMoed, Rosh Chodesh. We have different various degrees that we spoke about. So here the Shulchan Aruch writes in Hilchos Shabbos, Siman Tav Kuf Gimel, that we have the obligation to make sure that we don't do any hachana, any preparatory stages of any involvement that we're doing from something which is a Kedusha Chamura, like Shabbos, to a Kedusha Kala, to Yom Tov. And that means not only from Shabbos to Yom Tov, not only from Shabbos to Chol, that means from Shabbos to Chol HaMoed. You cannot do any of that. And that applies as well from Yom Tov Rishon to Yom Tov Sheni. What does that mean? We have Shavuos coming up. There's going to be 2 days of Shavuos here in Chutz Laaretz. I remember when I was a child, we called it Yom Tov Sheni Galios. Right? Galios means in the exile. So my father asked me as a child, I was a very young child, who instituted Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios? You look in the Torah, it doesn't say anything about it. In the Torah, we only have 1 day of Yom Tov. All of a sudden, later on in the exile, in the Galios, we have 2 days of Yom Tov. So my father asked me as a child, who instituted Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios? And I said, it must have been Galios. I assumed it was him, and he continued to ask me for many years till I finally figured out Galios probably was not the one that instituted Yom Tov Sheni. When we say Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios, it means of the people living in the exile. So we have a rabbinic obligation to keep a second day of Yom Tov, not just one like the Torah prescribes. We have to keep 2 days of Yom Tov. However, that second day of Yom Tov is not really a biblical obligation. It's only rabbinic, and therefore one is not allowed to prepare on the first day of Yom Tov for the purposes of the second day of Yom Tov, because that would be a violation of Hachana as well. Now, when Yom Tov comes around and you want to take something out of the freezer in order that tonight it should be defrosted and ready to go, so again, we assume that on Yom Tov you're allowed to do that as long as it's early enough that you would have been able to potentially use it on Yom Tov itself. Why? Which direction is the surprise in? What? No, so it says that you have to take it out early enough that you have the ability, potentially. So again, some people make a mistake and they take it out very late, so that's not really supposed to be done. In fact, the Magen Avraham writes that let's say you have sometimes that you make an Erev Tavshilin. When do we make an Erev Tavshilin? When you have Yom Tov that goes into Shabbos. All the men think it's the other way around. What do the men know? So we make an Erev Tavshilin. The Magen Avraham says that in his community they had a practice that whenever an Erev Tavshilin was made, because Yom Tov went straight into Shabbos, they specifically were Mekabel Shabbos early. On those Shabbos, they are Mekabel Shabbos early. Why were they Mekabel Shabbos early? Because he said, we want to make sure that anybody who's going to cook, part of the reason why we're allowed to make an Erev Tavshilin is because you might use it for Yom Tov itself. But that's only reasonable when you put it up with enough time that you actually might potentially use it on Yom Tov. Says the Magen Avraham, what happens if you put it up 5 minutes before Kabbalah Shabbos? There's nobody who's going to show up to your house in the next 3 minutes and you're going to go ahead and serve them this meat, this chalent, this whatever it is that you put up on Yom Tov. Says the Magen Avraham, the proper thing to do is, if you're putting something and getting it ready for Shabbos, which comes after Yom Tov, you should really put it up earlier in the day. You should really get it ready a little bit earlier in the day where you have a potential that somebody might actually make use of it on Yom Tov itself. So that's what the Magen Avraham writes. Now, you're going to kill me for bringing this up, but the Torah writes the following. We'll get to those questions in a few minutes. The Torah writes the following. What about doing something on Chol HaMoed for the purposes of Yom Tov? What would you say? You better be okay. Right? So that's certainly okay. Why? Logically, because Chol HaMoed is on a less degree of Kedusha than Yom Tov. Aha, says the Torah, what about Chol HaMoed for the purposes of the second day of Yom Tov? Well, Chol HaMoed is something that we biblically have to keep. Second day of Yom Tov is not. Second day of Yom Tov is only rabbinic. Says the tour, I don't understand. What is the permissibility for me to prepare on Chol HaMoed for the purposes of the second day of Yom Tov? Now I'm doing something on Chol HaMoed, which is not for the purposes of Chol HaMoed itself. It's not for the purposes of Yom Tov, which is on a higher level. It's for the purposes of the second day of Yom Tov, which is even less. So the Prima Gadim and others ask, what right do I have to do anything? To do malacha, certainly. How can I cook? That's a real malacha. How can I do a malacha on Chol HaMoed for the purposes of the second day of Yom Tov, which technically, on a biblical level, I'm not even obligated to keep? So this, if his question is correct, we have a major problem. So the question is correct, and the question is, how do you answer that question? Now that's a big issue. That's a big issue, yeah? So says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, if exactly what you're mentioning, if we assume that the rabbis instituted a second day of Yom Tov, and they took it so far as to tell a man, don't wear your tefillin on that second day of Yom Tov. How can they tell me not to wear my tefillin? What right do they have? And they went so far as to say that every man and woman should make a bracha lebatala, should daven a certain Shemona Esrei, should say Kiddush. How am I allowed to say Kiddush? How am I allowed to daven the Shemona Esrei? If they weren't concerned about the bracha lebatala and the wearing of tefillin that's not going to be worn, and everything else that comes along with instituting a second day of Yom Tov, said Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, it must be an indication that I'm also allowed to do something now for the purposes of that second day of Yom Tov. Because in some way we consider it to be a real Yom Tov. So again, it's interesting, because even though I'm not allowed to prepare on the first day of Yom Tov for the second day of Yom Tov, we assume that you are allowed to prepare on Chol HaMoed for the purposes of the second day of Yom Tov. That's a very fascinating point that's made, but it's just a question to consider. Yeah?
I understand that one of the lesser days was the Ramadan. However, does that mean that if both were from the Torah, then you could prepare from one day to the next?
Rosh Hashanah, is that what you mean?
Rosh Hashanah.
So Rosh Hashanah is an interesting question. The Mishnah Berurah writes clearly that Rosh Hashanah is not an exception to the rule. We generally think, the Gemara has a comment, that Rosh Hashanah is Yom Ma'arichta. Rosh Hashanah in some way is considered one long day. It's not really true. The Torah really only instructs us to keep one day Rosh Hashanah as well. So it's a little bit different than the other Yom Tovim, but Rosh Hashanah as well, the Mishnah Berurah writes clearly that one is not supposed to prepare from one day Rosh Hashanah to the second day, even though Rosh Hashanah's nature might be a little different than regular 2 days of Yom Tov. So that's a good point that you raise.
But theoretically, if they were two equal days, could you?
For sure. So let's say, I'll take your theoretical question and we'll discuss the following. Let's say I want to prepare this Shabbos for the purposes of next Shabbos. So that's basically your question. So when does that ever happen? What am I preparing now for next week? So let's say, for example, a man wears a talis in shul, and he has a special Shabbos talis. And you plan to use this talis when? Next Shabbos. I'm not going to use it again during the week. I have a separate talis that I use during the week. So I want to fold up the talis not for the purposes of weekday, not for the purposes of this Shabbos. I'm done with it for this Shabbos. I'm folding it up for the purposes of next Shabbos, that it should look nice. Or, for example, more practical for the women in the room, there was somebody who discussed with me about the fact that they love their dining room table, and they don't like that the table is covered with a tablecloth, because they think it's very nice. So they like that during the meals it's covered with a tablecloth, and they don't want to ruin the tablecloth, so they put a plastic on top of it. So what they do is, they, after the meal is over, they take off the plastic, throw it out, and then they take the nice tablecloth, fold it up, and put it away till next Shabbos. And this way, the rest of Shabbos, their beautiful table is visible for everyone to see. So okay, that's their preference, very nice. However, I was wondering, once they mentioned this to me, is that really permissible to take that tablecloth, fold it up? The only reason why I'm folding it up is that it should be ready for me to use next Shabbos. I'm not going to use it during the week. They don't use the Shabbos, they don't use the dining room table during the week, they use the kitchen. So the only reason why I'm folding up this tablecloth is not that I should use it on Shabbos itself, not that I should use it during the week, but that I should use it next Shabbos. Now, is that permissible? That's your question. When I have something which is biblically on the same level, Shabbos and Shabbos, should there be any problem to do something this Shabbos for the purposes of next Shabbos? So let's look at number Dalet. The Tosefta writes as follows. Madichim kelim mishabbos laosa Shabbos. I'm allowed to wash dishes on this Shabbos for the purposes of... What does it say? Again. Madichim kelim, I'm allowed to wash dishes may Shabbos leosa Shabbos, which means for this Shabbos. Avalo mi Shabbosu le Shabbos acheres, I'm not allowed to do something now for the purposes of next Shabbos, which is a very important point that you raised. Why should that be a prohibition? That's not a lower level than this Shabbos. Shabbos is the same both weeks. The answer is because if you understand that the underpinning of this halacha is that a person should never do any tircha shalo letzorech, a person should not be engaged in something which is unnecessary work on Shabbos itself, so then we would assume that applies not only to go to something lower, but also to something which is next week as well, which is seemingly on the same level as this Shabbos itself. So that's an important point that you mentioned, and that's something to keep in mind as well. Again, I don't know how relevant it is. I don't know how many people fold up the tablecloth and put it away till the next Shabbos, but if it is relevant, it's something to consider. And this prohibition of Achana, as we mentioned, applies not just to Malacha, but it applies as well to any Tircha that you're doing, like making the beds, like cleaning the dishes, or, take for example, when you have Sifrei Torah that need to be rolled. Not always do we lane from the Sefer Torah in the same place. So you have 2 days of Yomtiv, you're going to lane from the Sefer Torah in two different places. You don't want everyone to wait. So on the first day of Yomtiv, after you finish laning, you're going to roll the Sefer Torah in order it should be ready for tomorrow. Says the Shulchan Aruch, no, you're not allowed to do that because that is preparing from one day to the next. And you're not allowed to do that because the second day is only rabbinic, the first day is a biblical obligation. Any questions? Yes. As long as it's reasonable. I think as long as it's reasonable. Now again, some people take reasonable to an extreme. But again, if you're doing it in a reasonable way, and not just you could, but somebody actually perhaps would, let's say a soup. So you put a soup up on the fire. We don't assume that, right? I don't think we assume that most people would eat a soup while it's lukewarm. They would only eat the soup when it's hot. So again, if you do that, and it's hot, and it's reasonable that you would actually use that on Yom Tov itself, that's permissible. What do you mean? If I wanted soup Yom Tov afternoon, I'm allowed to heat up the soup, right? If I wanted to have a soup snack, so therefore we assume that's permissible.
But if I'm keeping in mind, clearly I want it so that I don't have to wait an hour after.
So again, so we'll see in a few minutes the Sefer Chassidim.
So you're saying, I don't have to literally eat it, as long as it's ready for me to eat, that's enough.
So again, we'll see in a few minutes the Sefer Chassidim has a little caveat to that and how you should do it properly, but we'll get to that. So hold on to that. Yeah.
Question. When I work.
Welcome back to the Shir. Wow. It's been a long time. Yes.
I remember, and I still kind of do it, when I was preparing food, like noodles and stuff, mm-hmm. I would make enough that I could put in the freezer so that I would have it ahead of time that I could take it out before Shabbos, or before Yom Kippur, whatever, mm-hmm. and use it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're saying you're not allowed to do that?
No. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to do that. No. During the week, you certainly should prepare. The question is when you have Chol HaMoed, and you're preparing on Chol HaMoed for the purposes of the second day of Yom Tov. Now, let's make clear. We assume la halacha, that's permissible as well. That's permissible as well. The only question is, why? So that's an important question, but bottom line, we assume that that's permissible. What are some exceptions to the rule where we would assume that one is allowed to do hachana, one is allowed to prepare on Shabbos for the purposes of the weekday? So one very simple example is, when you have, let's say, a dormitory, and you're going to have hundreds of students that are eating a meal together, and now they're going to clear off all the plates, they're going to put it in the kitchen, and you're going to have a situation where you have so much dirt piling up, and you're going to have flies coming in, and it's going to be unsanitary conditions, or you're going to have, it's going to smell, it's going to be a foul odor. In a case like that, we assume one would be allowed to wash all of those dishes on Shabbos. Why? Because the reason why I'm washing them is not to save myself time on Matzoi Shabbos. The reason why I'm doing it is because right now, the conditions on Shabbos itself are awful. And it's not one that gives me enjoyment on Shabbos. So therefore we assume I would be allowed to wash those and take care of them on Shabbos. Let's say in Eretz Yisrael, they talk about the Jewish hospitals, where they also make sure to have a point that everything should always be as clean as possible. No infections, no animals, no bugs. So if you're going to leave all the plates around after you serve a meal and you're not going to clean them right away, that's going to lower the level of cleanliness of the hospital. And we try our best to be as clean and sanitary as possible, and therefore we assume that would also be permissible. So what about those of us who don't live in a dormitory or those of us who don't frequent a hospital? And we have guests on Shabbos or we have our own family and we clean off the dishes and we put them into the sink. And now we have a big pile of dishes in the sink. Would we be allowed to clean those on Shabbos or not? The answer to that is, it depends what kind of person you are. If you're the kind of person that it bothers you even during the week, when you walk into your kitchen and you see a pile of dishes in the sink, so then we assume that on Shabbos, even if you're not going to use those plates anymore, or you eat home Friday night and you're planning to eat out the rest of Shabbos, you're not going to eat in the house, so you're certainly not going to need those plates, but it bothers you when you walk into your kitchen and you see a big mess, you would be allowed to wash those dishes on Shabbos, not because you want to make your job easier on Matzoi Shabbos, but rather because I want to enjoy the experience of Shabbos itself right now. So therefore, since it enhances my Shabbos right now, we assume that that would be permissible. Similarly, if you have a situation where, when I walk into my children's bedrooms and I see their beds are not made on Shabbos, if it's something that would bother you during the week, then it's something that you're allowed to do on Shabbos as well, even though you're not going to use it again on Shabbos, even though you're not planning on taking a nap on Shabbos, but because as you walk into your room, it annoys you, it takes away from your Onik Shabbos to see that the house is a big mess, you're allowed to go ahead and make the beds and clean the dishes on Shabbos because that enhances the experience of Shabbos itself. Yeah? I don't know why you need to come on to that. Again, there's a concept in halacha called an istinus, that there are people who are extremely finicky, people who are very particular and need to have things exactly the way they are. I don't think you need to go so far in this case. Again, it depends on your personality. If you're somebody who it really bothers during the week, again, sometimes you walk into people's homes and they have dishes piled up and it's only because you're visiting that they're embarrassed. But if you wouldn't be there, they wouldn't mind. So if they wouldn't mind during the week, then they shouldn't mind on Shabbos either. But if you're the kind of person that it does bother, so then it should bother you on Shabbos as well. And if it bothers you on Shabbos, you're allowed to clean them. So now the question comes the following. Let's say I want to take my dishes and not wash them on Shabbos. Again, it bothers me to have dishes in the sink. So we're on that premise that I'm that kind of person, so I want to wash the dishes. But I don't want to have to wash them by hand. I want to put them in the dishwasher. I'm obviously not allowed to run the dishwasher on Shabbos. That's an absolute violation. And even if I have a dishwasher that a non-Jew runs, you're not allowed to do that either. For the non-Jew to run the dishwasher or vacuum in your house on Shabbos is not permissible because we have a prohibition on Shabbos of avsha milsa, which means you're not allowed to have any malacha done in your home which makes noise on Shabbos because people might not know that there's a non-Jew in your home who turned on the dishwasher or who turned on the vacuum or who's running the washing machine. We have to be very careful. I know I was once at a very close friend's home where he had a full-time live-in in the house, and right after the meal was over, she took all the napkins, all the cloth napkins and all the tablecloths and everything and threw them into the washing machine and washed everything on Shabbos. Again, nobody asked her to do it. She just figured, I may as well do it now because why not? There's no problem for her to do malacha. And I pointed out to the person, yes, there's no problem for that woman to do the malacha, but it's not allowed to be done in your house. She wants to take it somewhere else, let her do whatever she wants. But for her, that malacha to be done in your house, that would be a problem because of avsha milsa. It makes noise as that goes. So now the question is, what about the silent dishwashers? So I don't know. I've come to check out some of those silent dishwashers. I've been told that now the silent dishwashers are really silent. The first ones that they made really were not. And somebody told me recently that they bought the newest silent dishwasher, and he said a number of times he had a flood in his kitchen because he didn't realize it was running, and he opened it up, and water came out. So I guess they really are silent. So if you have a silent dishwasher, that's a whole different story. Maybe you're allowed to set that on a Shabbos clock the same way you're allowed to set a Shabbos clock for many other things. So that's a question in and of itself. But let's not be so fancy. What about the good old dishwashers? And the problem also with those silent ones is that every time you open it, the light goes on or some buttons change or something on the screen is changing, so you have to be careful. But let's take the good old dishwasher where there's nothing changing when I open the door, nothing's going on, no screen is changing, no numbers are coming up, no light is going on. Now I want to load up the dishwasher to put all the dishes in, and obviously I'm going to run the cycle after Shabbos. Isn't that hachana? So I'm putting the dishes in my dishwasher. But the reason why I'm doing it is that should be out of my way. So it takes away from my onik Shabbos to have the dishes in the sink. but I don't want to wash them, so I put them in the dishwasher. Says Rav Moshe, that's all fine, but how do you get the dishwasher open? Isn't the dishwasher door mukta? Why not? So mukta doesn't mean that a light has to go on. If I have my cell phone and the cell phone is off on Shabbos, no light is going to go on. It's still an object that I'm not allowed to handle on Shabbos. That's what we call mukta. So how am I allowed to open the dishwasher door to load it up on Shabbos? Again, I'm allowed to load it because it takes away my onik Shabbos. But how am I allowed to open and close the door? After all, that is what we call mukta. It's not usable for Shabbos. What?
Why is a kosher lamp okay? You're touching. I would consider that mukta.
What am I touching? A piece of wood. I'm touching a door that is a mechanical device. So why should I be allowed to use that? It's an electronic device. What? What? So a refrigerator door has food on it. A refrigerator door has food on it, which is going to be used on Shabbos. So that's why we assume a refrigerator door is allowed to be used. An oven doesn't have any electronical parts on the door of the oven that you open and close. But here, the whole thing is, the mechanism is in the door. So how am I allowed to do that? So the answer of Moshe writes is, we have many categories of mukta. And someone last night mentioned maybe we should have the summer series, the 6 weeks in the summer about mukta. Would that be of interest? Maybe? Okay. So there you have it. So we'll get into it more in detail when we learn Hilchas Mukta perhaps, or other Hilchas Shabbos, but one of the categories of mukta is something that is a kli shemalachto le'iser. Let's say, for example, you have something like a hammer. So why is a hammer mukta on Shabbos? What's wrong with a hammer? Nothing inherently is wrong. There's no mechanism in it. What's wrong with it? It's just a piece of metal. The answer is that the only thing that I use a hammer for is for prohibited activities on Shabbos. And therefore we assume that a hammer is generally considered to be mukta on Shabbos. The rule is when you have something in that category of mukta, which is a kli shemalachto le'iser, something which is only used for prohibited activities on Shabbos, we assume that if you're moving it letzorach gufo or letzorach mekomo, if you're moving it because you need this space, so we assume that's permissible. So for example, we were doing some fix-up work in the house on Erev Shabbos. After we were done, I asked my child to put the hammer away, and of course they put it away on the dining room table. Right? Right where all hammers and screwdrivers belong. So now we come to set the table on Shabbos morning, Friday night, and we see that there's a hammer in somebody's way, or there's a hammer in the middle of the table, and it's not something that we want on the table. So we need that space because we need to either put a plate there or because we want to put flowers or the centerpieces or whatever it might be, and the hammer is in the way. So what do? So some people mistakenly think you go and you push it off with your elbow. That's going to crack your floor. You don't have to do that. You're allowed to move it with your hands to another place, to another location. Because we assume that mukta does not apply when you have an item which is a kli shemalachto le'iser, and you need that space that the item is taking up. So we assume you're allowed to move that hammer. And one thing to notice also is that when we allow you to move that hammer, we don't just allow you to take it and put it on the side. Once we allow you to move it, you're allowed to put it somewhere that is safe, even if it's going to be a longer distance to walk that way. So again, I can take the hammer off the table and put it on the side of the room. I don't want it on the side of the room. And it's not safe to have it on the side of the room. A kid is going to trip over it or something of that nature. Once I'm allowed to move the hammer, I'm allowed to move it even to a place where it's safe. I'm allowed to bring it to the garage or wherever it might be that the hammer will be comfortable. So over here says Rav Moshe, why am I allowed to open up the dishwasher door? Because he says that's called tzorach mekomo. The dishwasher door is in my way. I need this space. Why do I need this space? Because I want to pull out the racks. I can't pull out the racks with the door in the way. Therefore, says Rav Moshe, I'm allowed to open the dishwasher door, even though it's technically mukta, it's a klisha malachta le'iser, but that's called tzorach mekomo. I need that place. The same way I'm allowed to move the hammer if it's in the place, so too I'm allowed to move the door. Okay, so now I open the door, load up my dishes. Now, what about closing it? Says Rav Moshe, that's once again called tzorach mekomo. I need that space. I don't want to have to dance around my kitchen to make sure that I don't bump into the dishwasher door and hurt myself. Therefore, says Rav Moshe, that once again is called tzorach mekomo. So I'm allowed to open the door and once again close the door after I'm finished because that is tzorach mekomo. Now, keep in mind, if you have those dishwashers, that something changes as you open it up and the screen is the right something as a result of its being open, or a light is going to go on or off, you have to be very careful and conscientious about that before obviously loading up a dishwasher. Yeah. So again, if you have, let's say, dishes that you forgot to unload before Shabbos and now you need them, so then you're allowed, once again, that's Ramosha's Heter, that's Tzarech Makomo. I need this space right now because the only way I can get into the rack is by opening it up. Does that address the question? As something that's for a malacha. Uh-huh. Okay, interesting point. Yeah.
I wanted to go back to something you said earlier about being in Kamari, if you want to learn Torah and it's very important. Mm-hmm. Is that more important than having Shalashuddas?
No.
So what happens?
Shalashuddas is more important. However, the Magen Avraham writes, and this is an important point to be aware. We can't discuss everything in one shir. We just have to pick what we're going to discuss. But the Achronim do talk about the importance of a Shabbos afternoon public shir. It's a very important thing that a shul has a public shir on Shabbos afternoon patterned off of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what he did. He used to hold a public shir on Shabbos afternoon. And the Achronim take this very seriously. In fact, the Gemara has a story about the two sons of Reb Meir, that they were punished very severely because whenever the rabbi got up to give the shir on Shabbos afternoon, they said, oh, we're going to go and learn on our own. We don't need the rabbi's shir. Now you have people in every community who say the same thing. I'm greater than the rabbi, which they might be correct. And they feel, it's fine. They can feel that way. I don't feel bad, but it doesn't matter. The Beis Yosef was the teacher of, what was his name? No. He was the teacher of, what was his name? The rabbi in Tzfat was not the Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef lived in Tzfat, but he davened in the shul of one of his Talmidim. Who? The Arizal. No. The Beis Yosef davened in the shul of one of his Talmidim. Who was it again? The Alshich. The Alshich was a student of, I think so. The Alshich was a student of the Beis Yosef. I'm not mistaken. I think that was him. And it's told that the Beis Yosef, although he was light years ahead of his student, and he was the one who gave him smicha, he would show up to the shir on Shabbos afternoon because there's an obligation for a community to have a shir together and everybody participates. So you think you're greater than the rabbi, you might be greater than the rabbi, so then give the shir. But if you're not going to be the one to give the shir, you should be showing up to the shir and participating because that's a very important thing. So some achronim say that if the result of not going to the shir, you have a toss-up between the shir and shalashuddas. So some achronim say maybe shalashuddas should be pushed to the side and the shir takes precedence. Again, like the Shulchan Aruch says, chacham eina berosho, try to plan in advance that you should map out your Shabbos properly. And you should have shalashuddas at a time when you can eat shalashuddas and you can go to the shir at a time when you can go to the shir. There's a way that we can try to observe both of those important ideas. Okay, so now let's move on. Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva also about the following issue, and this is relevant as well for those who have young children or grandchildren. So as we know, let's say Shabbos is over at 8 o'clock, and my kids are not going to go to sleep until 9 o'clock. So when do we get them into pajamas usually on a regular day of the week? 6 o'clock. That's part of the routine. We get them into pajamas at 6, we let them run around the house and let off all the steam from 6 till 8, and then we put them into bed after that time. So the question is here, says Ramosha, when I'm getting my kids into pajamas at 6 o'clock in the afternoon on Shabbos, isn't that hachana? The only reason why I'm doing it is for the purposes of Matzoi Shabbos, that they should be able to go to sleep on time. I'm not going to put them to sleep on Shabbos itself. I'm going to put them to sleep after Shabbos. So Rav Moshe writes, that would not be a problem at all. That's what he calls Derech Levishasa. No, this is what they're supposed to be wearing at 6 o'clock in the afternoon every day. This is what they do. And therefore he says, this is part of the routine. If we're not going to be in the routine, the kids are going to go crazy. If we're not going to give them supper at a certain time, even though the supper is in order that they shouldn't be hungry on Matzoi Shabbos, that's not called Hachana, that's just part of our regular routine. That's what we do. This is what they're supposed to be wearing right now. And therefore, we assume that would be permissible. I have a question that comes up every week in my home. And it comes up very often from younger members of the population of the shul. And that is with regard to studying on Shabbos for the purposes of an exam that I have during the week. So let's say, take me for example. During the week, I'm busy running around, taking care of things in the shul. On Shabbos, I seem to have more time than during the week. So on Shabbos, very often on Friday night or Shabbos afternoon, I'll take out 25 svarim, I'll read a whole lot of things, and I'm not going to remember after Shabbos what I saw or what I want to talk about during the week. So on Shabbos, I prepare a lot for my shiurim during the week. Now, it's clear that I'm not learning that learning on Shabbos for the purposes of Shabbos. I'm not going to give that shiur on Shabbos. I'm preparing it for Tuesday or for Monday. So isn't that hachana? I'm reading all these svarim with clear intent that I'm only going to use them during the week. So isn't that a prohibition of hachana? Or, for example, you have somebody who has a Gemara final on Monday, or you have somebody who has a Tanakh final, or whatever it might be, and the kids want to know, are they allowed to study on Shabbos for the purposes of that final? On any other regular Shabbos, they would never learn Gemara or Navi, but now, the reason why they're doing it is because they have the exam coming up and they want to do it. Or you have a bar mitzvah boy who's preparing his parsha, and he seems to have plenty of time on Shabbos when he doesn't have during the week. Are you allowed to do that on Shabbos, even though it's not for the sake of this Shabbos, it's for 6 months. 6 months from now? Should that be permissible? The answer to all of that is yes. Why? Because there's inherent value in the learning of Torah itself. And yes, it's true. I'm learning Torah now in order that my shiur should be well prepared during the week, but there's inherent value in the fact that I'm becoming more scholarly right now on Shabbos. There's inherent value in the fact that I'm studying the Gemara or the Tanakh right now, even though I have an exam later on in the week. And the reason why I'm doing it is for that. But since there's value in the studying that I'm doing now, and I'm accumulating knowledge on Shabbos itself, we would assume that that would be permissible. However, the Sefer Hasidim warns us, and this is relevant to the question you raised before, Sefer Hasidim writes a number vav, that when a person does that, let's say I have a date on Matzoi Shabbos, and I want to be awake for the date, or I have a meeting, I have something else, and I need to go somewhere. So Shabbos afternoon is a long Shabbos afternoon. I generally don't take a nap, but this week I want to because I want to make sure that I'm awake on Matzoi Shabbos. Says the Shulchan Aruch, you're allowed to do that. Why are you allowed to do it? Because there's inherent value in the sleeping on Shabbos itself. That's very enjoyable. However, he says, when you're doing that, the Magen Avraham quotes the Sefer Hasidim, you should not say, oh, I'm going to sleep now because I want to make sure to be up for my date tonight, or I want to make sure to be up for whatever it is that I have to do tonight. No, you should go to sleep, enjoy the sleep, and don't say anything. And that, I say, is the same with regard to your question. Whenever you do something, and there's inherent value in what you're doing now, and you could use the food, let's say, on Shabbos itself or on Yom Tov itself, don't say explicitly the reason why I'm doing this, the reason why I'm taking it out of the freezer, the reason why I'm doing this certain activity that I'm involved in is for the purposes of after Shabbos or after Yom Tov. No, you should just leave it as is. You shouldn't say anything. And in a case like that, we assume that would be permissible. One final example that we'll discuss is that the Shulchan Aruch assumes that it's permissible to do something on Shabbos when the reason why I'm doing it is limnoa hefsid, to make sure that something doesn't get destroyed, doesn't get ruined. So you take, for example, I serve breakfast to my children on Shabbos morning, I take out the milk. If I'm going to have to leave out the milk till after Shabbos, because no one else is going to use it for the duration of Shabbos, the milk is going to get spoiled. If I'm going to take out the orange juice to give everybody in the morning, and then I'm not going to put it away, it's not going to be good after Shabbos if I leave it out the entire day. So therefore we assume one would have the right, although the only reason why I'm putting the milk back in the fridge is to use it on Sunday morning, and that should be hachana, since if I don't put it in the fridge, it's going to get ruined, we assume that that would be permissible on Shabbos. So that's something to keep in mind as well. Rav Asher Weiss discusses a case, which is a fascinating story, that he said, let's say you have in Israeli hospitals, so they're allowed to do malacha on Shabbos because that's generally pikuach nefesh. They're allowed to take care of the patients because that's a life-threatening situation most of the time. However, you have some people when they give birth, some women when they give birth, they elect to keep the cord blood in a bank because that blood is considered to be very important blood and very helpful. Now the question is, there are many malachos involved in extracting that blood and putting it away properly. For example, we don't have to go into all the malachas that are involved in there, but one of the issues that comes up is hachana. Why am I extracting the blood? For future use. It's almost never going to be used today. It's going to be used 25, 30 years down the line, if ever. So what right do I have to do a malacha on Shabbos now, to do any activity on Shabbos now, when the purposes of what I'm doing is not for the purpose of Shabbos itself? It's something for the purpose of 20, 30 years down the line. So you'll say, well, it might be pikuach nefesh 30 years down the line. It might be. Is that something that we consider? Do we worry now for a pikuach nefesh 30 years down the line? That's not clear. And not always is that blood used. More often than not, I don't know, but more often than not, I was told, the blood is not used at all. People are mostly healthy and don't always need that blood transfusion from the cord blood. So to argue that it's pikuach nefesh is a difficult argument. Again, there's what to be said for it, but it's hard to say. It's hard to justify. With regard to the prohibition of hachana on Shabbos, or Rosh Weiss argued, that should not be a problem at all. Why? Because when it comes to hachana, the same way I'm allowed to put the milk back in the fridge in order that it shouldn't get spoiled, so too, I know it's a crass example, but if I don't take the cord blood at the moment of the birth, then it's going to be lost forever. You're not going to be able to make that up later and do it after Shabbos. And because it's limnoa hefsid, because if I don't do it now, it's going to be a tremendous loss later on, therefore we assume that that would be permissible. And one final case I want to talk about is the Shmirah Shabbos Kilchasa talks about whether or not a person who walks into shul on Matzai Shabbos to Daven Ma'ariv is allowed to take a sitter from the back of the shul and bring it to their seat. This is a very surprising discussion. I'm coming into shul, it's Shabbos. I walk into shul, the natural reaction is you take a sitter from the back, you walk to your seat. However, he says, when are you going to use that sitter? After Shabbos is over. So it's for the purposes of Matzai Shabbos. Isn't that Hachana? So the Shmir Shabbos Kachasa writes, he thinks that that's a problem of Hachana, and you have to make sure that when you take the sitter, you either read a Kapitel Tehillim, or you learn some Pirkei Avos, because if you only take the sitter and walk to your seat and schmooze with the people next to you, and then you use the sitter only after Shabbos is over, that would be a prohibition of Hachana. And I think, with all the greatest of respect to Rav Neivert, who wrote the Shmir Shabbos Kachasa, I think he's absolutely wrong. I think why he's wrong is, and I've discussed it with many others and who are involved in halacha, I think he's wrong because of the following. The Gemara has a concept which is very relevant. You'll see in a minute why it's relevant to our day-to-day, to our week-to-week Shabbos. The Gemara has a comment that, kol davar shegazru chachamim lo gazru alav bein hashmashos. Anything that is only rabbinic in its very nature, anything that is only an isur d'rabbanan on Shabbos, they did not apply that prohibition during the time of bein hashmashos. So for example, the Gemara says, let's say you have a case where a woman bakes challah, and she takes the challahs out on Friday night, and she's ready to go, and the husband just went to shul, and now she's getting the table set, and she realizes, I wasn't mafresh challah. She forgot to be mafresh challah. So what do we do? Everybody's waiting for this challah. Everybody wants it. What do we do? So what is the nature of the prohibition to be mafresh challah on Shabbos? It's only rabbinic. It's an isser midrabbanan. Because it's an isser midrabbanan, therefore we assume the woman is allowed to go in the time of bein hashmashos, now that it's still the twilight zone, and it's not absolutely Shabbos yet, we assume that the woman's allowed to go, be mafresh the challah now, and serve it at the table on Friday night. Even though I could have had matzah, I could have gotten around it, but no. Since we assume that the challah is something we all prefer, and it's something that's obviously going to take away from your onik Shabbos if you're not going to do that, so in the time of bein hashmashos, we assume that is a permissible activity to do, because since it's only rabbinic, in that time period, we assume a person is allowed to violate prohibitions, and there's no problem at all. The same would apply over here. The whole prohibition of Hachana is only midrabbanan. It's a rabbinic prohibition. It's not something you'll find in any pasuk in Chumash. It's only rabbinic in its nature. And therefore, we should generally assume that the prohibition of Hachana does not apply to the time of Bein Hashmashos. When you come to Shul on Matzai Shabbos, it's way past Bein Hashmashos. It's already dark outside. And therefore, we assume that the rabbinic prohibition really should not apply then, because anything that's only rabbinic in its nature does not apply Bein Hashmashos. How is this relevant practically? Forgetting about the sitter, it's relevant practically. People ask the question all the time. You eat Shalosh Shudas, now everybody runs to shul, and you're left with a mess. So you want to really clear off the table after Shalosh Shudas is over in order that you can get going. Are you allowed to clear off the table after Shalosh Shudas, or do you say you have to leave everything out? The answer is you are allowed to. My father has told me on many occasions you're allowed to clear off the table. Again, it depends when you're eating Shalosh Shudas. So there are two factors here. If you're eating Shalosh Shudas in the middle of the afternoon and it bothers you to have a messy table, certainly you're allowed to clear it off. But let's say most people eat Shalosh Shudas at the end of Shabbos and they'll say, okay, another half an hour with the messy table. All right, not a big deal. We'll go sit somewhere else. We'll sit in the living room. My father told me many times that you're allowed to do that because that is only an issur d'rabbanan of Hachana. You're preparing now to make your job easier on Matzai Shabbos. But you're allowed to violate the issur of Hachana during Bein Hashmashos of Shabbos, not only on the way into Shabbos, but also on the way out of Shabbos. And therefore, my father told me that he thinks one would be allowed to take all the mess that's on the table on Shabbos after Shalosh Shudas, and it's during Bein Hashmashos, one would be allowed to clear that off because Hachana, which is only rabbinic, does not apply during the time of Bein Hashmashos. Yes, questions?
Why